When friends get together, they blether. And when these two friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions.
Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues.
We hope that you enjoy listening to our podcast and you could join in our blethers on social media. You can find us at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcast and we'd love it if you could share them with your friends and maybe leave a review on the platform of your choice. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether. Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the third series of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
Oh, so much happening, Helen. You know, this is supposed to be the downtime of the year, you know, before the guiding season starts. What have you been up to?
Well, I've not been up to too much, Liz. I'm heading down to London tomorrow just for the day there and back. But you have had quite a little adventure as you went on a foreign trip.
I did. Nothing's ever straightforward. You know, you think that at my age I should learn to sit down and be more content. But my husband and I, we went to cycle the Camino Portugues. But we didn't do the easy route by the coast. We opted for the central route because we love our mountain bikes. You know that. I've spoken about that many times. And so we hired mountain bikes. But my goodness, Ellen, we christened these the stealth bombers. They were brilliant, but they were so heavy. So we trudged away and then eventually we saw sense and we started to go by the roads and the wee winding lanes and we had the most wonderful time. And it was the last day and on the Camino Santiago, as it comes into Santiago, you can take a boat route, which was the route that the disciples took the body of James, St. James, as they took him to what would become Santiago. And it's called the Transfixio. It's the way of the crosses. Absolutely marvellous. I was enthralled. It was a beautiful sunrise. I was spotting these crosses. I was in my element. And I stepped forward to ask the captain something and whew, I went ears over elbow, as we'd say in Scotland, and thump. And I knew right away I'd broken my ankle, but I sort of stomped around and tried to get it right. And I succeeded in getting home. Thankfully, it was the last day. But I'm now in a stooky, Helen, and I am so frustrated.
Oh, when you sent me that picture of the stooky, a stooky for anybody is what you might call a plaster cast or a boot, but a stooky in Scotland. And when I saw it, Liz, I had a wee smile. I am sorry. But the other thing I thought was amazing, Liz, that you're a typical Scot. You thought, oh, I'm not going to any of these foreign doctors that might charge me money. And so you made yourself come all the way home to get your treatment.
Well, that was actually my husband.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that.
Just get over it. Just get over it. So there wasn't much sympathy and let's go and find a medical centre. No, it was just, we'll get you home and you'll be all right. So that was the story. But that's me. But I have to say that hopefully by the time the guiding season starts, hopefully I'll be back on my feet again.
And, oh, you will, Liz, definitely. You will.
It's just such a wonderful time of year, isn't it, as we head into Easter week.
Yes, and today we've got a fantastic day. We've got sort of blue skies and sunshine, but snow on the hills in the sunshine. It looks fantastic.
Yes, it was forecast that this week in some places you might get up to 7 centimetres of snow falling in Scotland. But when you think of Easter, you think of, you just breathe a sigh of relief. That's the end of all those dark winter months. You've got the dawn chorus in the morning.
That's right. And I've got two wonderful big thick hedges running up the sides of both sides of my back garden. And the birds are definitely nest building there. And of course, dawn now is so much earlier. It's, you can hear them, about 4:30 or 5 in the morning. You can hear the birds thinking, time to get up.
Yep. We've got all the flowers coming through. We've had the snowdrops, had the primroses. We're getting the crocuses. And of course, we've got friends who are in the farming industry and they're waiting for the start of the lambing.
Yes. My friend Margaret and John, John always tells me 10th of April, Helen, first lambs, 10th of April. Yep. Wait till the snow's gone.
Yep. And then the snow comes, as we're seeing at the moment.
And it did.
Born into a shivering cold world. But of course, this is the time of year when we celebrate Easter. And I don't know about you, Helen, but I love Easter.
It's nice. It's a nice kind of gently colourful time of year. And it's a happy time of year, although, you know, the events leading up to Easter were not as happy, but the resurrection and everything makes it kind of joyful.
Yeah. And this year it's falling very early in the calendar. And people might wonder, you know, why is Easter not set at a particular time of year? This time it's falling on Sunday, the 31st of March. And the reason for that is all about the tides. Because it's lunar. It's the first Sunday after the high tide. And so it changes. So this year it's early on. So it's colder than perhaps when it falls later in the year.
Yes, because my birthday's in the middle of April and quite often it lands on Easter. So we're really early this year. And what's more, the schools will actually be off at Easter. Quite often the schools in Scotland are not off at Easter if Easter is later.
Yep. And we're different again from the rest of the UK, because in the rest of the UK, Easter Monday is a bank holiday. And if you go back to a previous episode, we explain all about, you know, the bank holidays being different in Scotland. So sometimes the Easter break falls in the school holidays, as you say, other times it doesn't. And they get an additional holiday because in Scotland, we get the bank holiday on the Friday, Good Friday.
Yes, and the schools this are coming off now. There's Thursday is their last day at school just before Easter, so chaos will reign throughout Scotland.
At least you won't have the school run.
No, I won't have the school run, that's good. Yeah. Even the nursery's off.
But it's a wonderful time, a wonderful celebration, the celebration of spring and new growth, which goes back to pagan times. But it's also nowadays a big Christian festival, but it's got a lot of food traditions associated with it.
And also right up our street, Liz, exactly, food traditions.
Exactly. So we thought we'd take a look at the Scottish Easter and see what was similar and what was different. And of course, starting with the root of it, it is absolutely immersed in the Christian tradition and the resurrection. So we have big Easter services, you know, that all the churches join together now because there's such a problem with the shortage of ministers and the small congregations. But it's lovely a coming together of the different churches in the area for all the Easter services.
Yes, and it's each of the sort of traditional services of this Easter week are taking place in different churches. So the congregations are, you know, moving around the different villages in our area, Liz, to go to these services. Really nice. We've got our Easter Sunday service in our church is communion as well. And we also get, Liz, they might be interested in this, you might get up there somehow, hobble up. They get breakfast. We're getting rolls, sausage rolls, bacon rolls, eggs as well.
Yeah, we'll come on to the eggs, but this is another feature of a lot of these Easter services across Scotland, is getting up early in the morning to see the sun rising. So it's a time of early morning. They say in some places, Dornoch up on the Murrayfirth, is it? No, it's not the Murrayfirth.
It's beyond that. Yeah,
but up on the northeast coast.
Yeah.
They get up early to see the sun dancing as it comes up. You know, there's this expression that it's dancing and speckles of colour coming out of it. So a lot of churches will do these early morning services, which I think the breakfast comes from.
Yes, yes. And I think they used to, I don't know if they're doing it this year, they used to walk around the village on the morning of Easter. I'm not sure if they're doing it, but that's where the breakfast, you, after you've had a wee walk, you need a breakfast. And it's also nice, the community coming together.
Yeah.
And Easter Sunday is a celebration of the resurrection.
And just like Christmas, we think of it as a Christian celebration because Sunday, Easter Sunday, is also Resurrection Sunday, as being one of the most important, if not the most important, day of the year in the Christian calendar. But it goes back beyond that, because the word Easter itself actually comes from an Anglo-Saxon goddess called Easter. So a pagan tradition, and she was traditionally depicted as a goddess of fertility, of dawn and light. And so there were pagan festivals which celebrated her long before the Christian interpretation was begun to be associated with Easter.
Yes, I think it's really nice to see and look in to see that what we think as you're very Christian or whatever goes back to pagan times. They didn't just cut paganism off and start Christianity. They kind of rolled it forward, giving further information to Christianity. So it's lovely to see this, the green men that you see in churches, that's pagan symbols, but symbols of fertility and part of the Christian church now.
Yeah, and one of the other things that I noticed when we were cycling around in Portugal, the colour purple. You know, all of the church, we were doing the Camino, so obviously there are crosses and churches all the way along it. And everything, the crosses and the statues, were draped in purple, which is very much the colour associated with Easter. It symbolises penance, humility and sorrow for Christ's suffering. So purple very much you see, and you see the crocuses coming through, the purple of that.
Yeah. And it's quite good for you being in Europe at this time, because I think, you know, sadly, we've kind of lost the symbolism that you still see in Europe. So you were seeing that. I was unaware of purple being an Easter colour, Liz. That maybe shows my ignorance.
Well, it just was brought to me, as I say, because I was wondering why everything was draped. But also, you know, because you say close to our hearts, it comes after Lent. And of course, that's a time of giving things up for Lent, fasting, penitence. But at the end of that, it was then a time for feasting and celebrations. So in most Christian countries, and certainly in Scotland, and certainly on Sunday, it's what we'll be having. The main meal will be roast lamb.
Yes. Now, again, it's interesting because I'm unaware of that. You know, we didn't really have traditionally have roast lamb, maybe because my mother couldn't cook roast lamb. I think it was probably still the silver side that we had.
Oh, right. But the stovies the next day.
That's right. So I'm not aware of my mother cooking roast lamb. But I understand, you know, why lamb. I'm just thinking of poor John's lambs are not going to be born until the 10th of April. Oh, dear. Mind you, but that's a year after. So they're still lambs up until now. So that's quite when they're in the market. Yeah.
We don't slaughter them at birth. We give them a year to put a bit of a bit of flesh on their bones.
Right.
But actually, thinking about that, it comes from the reason why we eat lamb. I mean, there's several reasons associated with it. But the reason, according to the Bible, is that it's all to do in Exodus. It talks about the people of Egypt having suffered terrible plagues, and that the Israelites painted their doorposts with sacrificed lamb's blood so that God would pass over their homes. So that's Passover. So it comes from the traditional Jewish festival of Passover. But then when Jews were converted to Christianity, they continued this tradition, eating lamb at Easter. So that's the sort of biblical sense of why we eat lamb at Easter. But if you think about it, going back in time, this would have been the first meat that would have been available after winter. And so people would have, you know, they would have sacrificed lambs to ensure a good harvest back in the pagan days. Christ is referred to as the Lamb of God. So lots of religious reasons, but it was just practical. It was the first meat that was available.
That's right. And the other things that are associated with Easter in terms of food is simnel cake.
Yep.
Which, you know, is, you know, packed with fruit and spices, and but always with sort of little marzipan balls decorating the top of it. 11, the 12 minus one disciple, no Judas on there. But that was the Simnel cake, but we also have, you know, clootie dumpling. Oh, there was lovely clootie dumpling at church last Sunday.
Right, was it?
Yes, it was really
one of the old ones. Yeah, would have been making it in the old style.
Yeah, Pat from the Highlands can make beautiful clootie dumplings, so it was lovely. So that's what we often have at Easter, is a clootie dumpling as well.
Yeah, I had never heard of Simnel cakes until the day of all the you know, sort of Mary Berries and Prue Leeds bringing it onto the television. I had never seen a Simnel cake, but certainly I know my clootie dumplings. And if anybody's wondering what we're talking about, go back to previous episodes. A clute is a cloth, so a dumpling boiled in a cloth, lots of fruit and suet and spices. Delicious. But of course, thinking about sweet, spicy things, the most iconic, one of the most iconic symbols of Easter is the hot cross bun.
Yes, and I love hot cross buns. But Liz, have you not noticed that hot cross buns are in the shops almost, well, if it's not 12 months a year, it's 11 months a year. But at Easter time, they come out and they're a little bit better and nicer at Easter time, aren't they? Because I think you feel that they're meaningful.
I think they're loss leaders in supermarkets because all of the supermarkets have got the 2-for-1 and all the deals on them. But what I was actually interested in was they say that the Scottish hot cross buns are spicier than the English ones. Now, if you think about Tesco's or any of the big supermarkets, they'll all be the same, whether they're in Scotland or England. But I've never noticed going to a sort of traditional baker if they're any spicier. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I haven't. And that is interesting because I'm afraid you're really quite naughty. I just tend to buy in the supermarket, but I think I will go to Baker's this week and try and get, you know, proper hot cross buns.
Yeah, and talking of Baker's, when you think of Baker's, the one that comes to mind for us on our tours, Fisher and Donaldson's, you know, they're at Fife, particularly St Andrews, they're actually doing a hot cross bun in the form of their, what do you call them there?
Their fudge donuts.
Fudge donuts. Yes. So you can get they're very short in supply. You've got to order them, but you can actually have a fudge donut hot cross bun. What does that sound like?
Sounds fabulous. And Liz, guess where I'm going on Good Friday with a tour?
Oh, you're not.
I'm going to St Andrews. I'm taking a group
of
people.
Give you a challenge. To St Andrews. It ordered, Helen. Get it ordered. Let me taste a fudge donut. Oh, you'd be worth your weight in gold for that.
Oh, that's a lot of gold.
But again, they say that that goes back to pagan times as well. It represented the four quarters of the moon, the four seasons, the wheel of life. So, you know, even though we think of, you know, the cross being, you know, the story goes that it was a monk that put crosses on the buns that he was baking for the poor people right back in the 14th century. You know, it could be that it goes back before that.
Yes, yes, because, you know, everything we seem to think we've invented has happened quite some time before. But Easter without what, Liz, is not Easter.
Eggs everywhere.
I know. I was in the supermarket the other day, and they've got aisles packed with Easter eggs. You know, and I think, I've got 8 grandchildren. I'm not buying 8 Easter eggs.
Well, today we think of them as chocolate eggs, and you have to think about in the news recently, it's absolutely been a media frenzy about one poor shopkeeper up in the Sinclair General Stores on the island of Sandy, which is up in the Orkney Isles. Now, the Isle of Sandy has a population of about 460, so not a lot of people. And how many times have you made a mistake when you've been ordering something online? Well, this poor guy meant to order 80 chocolate Easter eggs, and it turned out that he ordered 80 cases, and they started to roll off the lorry. There were 720 of them arrived.
Oh, I know. What a shame. But actually, I think from what I can see, he's just going to cut his losses, and the people of Sandy are going to have a wonderful Easter.
Yeah, and he's been very innovative. You know, you can just imagine it, all the puns around the Easter eggs. You know, they've been egging them on, and they've been, you know, so, you know, it's, and it got picked up by the Orkney newspaper, and that in turn got picked up by media across the nation. I think it's probably gone worldwide by now.
Yes, I think so.
everybody talking about it because everybody's done it. And of course, what he was saying was that when it started to arrive, he was so indignant. You know, I have not ordered 80 cases. And then he looked at it and oops, I actually have. Yeah. So what he's done is that the manager of his shop is the president of the RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute. And so he has raffled off 100 of these eggs. And because it's gone nationwide, everybody's buying up the raffle tickets. And so the RNLI, in their 200th year, are doing very nicely.
That's brilliant.
So it's lovely.
RNLI, Royal National Lifeboat Institute. So all these volunteers around the coast saving lives are going to benefit. Maybe another boat could come from it.
Who knows? You know, so... Yeah. Yeah, the power of social media in these days. But you know, we've got all this commercialisation, Easter cards, Easter chocolate eggs. But the association with eggs goes way, way back before the 19th century when, first of all, Fry's and then Cadbury started to produce their chocolate eggs. They were traditionally eaten after Lent finished. You know, so if you imagine that they weren't eaten through Lent, so there was a lot of eggs at the end when Lent was finished. So they did everything with them. They decorated them. They did egg hunts. All of these traditions that we preserve today. But most of all, they ate them.
Yes, yes. Well, I've discovered in my new air fryer that I can boil. But put that in inverted commas, boil an egg in 9 minutes and it's perfect.
My goodness, because you try that in a microwave and it explodes.
And I thought it would explode. It doesn't explode. Just put it in the tray, put it in, dial it up for 9 minutes. Perfect. Boiled egg, soft boiled egg.
You're Salen's answer to Mary Berry,
oh,
I tell you.
I know.
Well, the tradition was to give eggs to friends, you know, to the church. And so that's where this tradition of giving chocolate eggs, and we don't give chicken or duck or goose eggs nowadays, it's chocolate eggs. And in the UK, there's 80 million chocolate eggs purchased every year.
That's crazy. It's really crazy. But I love the Cadbury's cream egg. You can't beat that one. But it's got awfully small.
It has. And that's, you know, that's another thing that's hitting the press just now, because most of the UK's chocolate supply comes from Ghana. And it's really been hit by climate change.
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, chocolate is very, very expensive. So the Easter eggs have doubled in price in some cases. And in other cases, exactly what you're saying, they've just reduced the size of them.
Yes. Have you ever tried to make an Easter egg?
I have not.
I actually got a mold and I did melt chocolate and made an Easter egg because I thought I would be terribly kind of, you know, earth motherly and give my children homemade Easter eggs. It didn't really work too well.
Oh dear. I admire your enterprise, but no, I just go to the shop and buy them.
That's easier.
Particularly up on Sandy. I'm sure he's got a surplus to sell.
That's true.
And then have you ever done an Easter egg hunt for the kids?
Yes. Now this is something that's quite new because I don't remember Easter egg hunts when I was young, but yes, the Easter bunny and the Easter egg hunt is an annual occurrence at Easter in this house. My garden is used because they can come and the Easter bunny can hide the eggs without it being spotted. And my garden is used for the Easter egg hunt.
No, it wasn't something I did as a child. And again, the Easter bunny would seem to be a modern convention, you know, for kids these days. But again, it goes right back to pagan times, fertility goddesses, where the fertility goddess was often represented by a hare or a rabbit because they are so prolific. They were seen as a symbol of fertility and rebirth. And going back to Easter, it's said that she found a bird dying from the cold and transformed it into a hare, and the hare then laid eggs as a sign of rebirth and renewal. So that's where we get the symbol of eggs associated with pagan times.
Now you see, I never knew that about the bunny, because I always just assumed it had come from America, because it, you know, the time scale, not having it when I was growing up and it now being very much the thing now. But no, that's interesting, going back to pagan times.
No, they say that it came from Germany, from Middle Ages. But I have something in the back of my mind and I couldn't find it for the life of me. So if any of our listeners can help me with this, I had it that the story of the Easter Bunny was something to do with St. Francis. And the little bunny in the forest, all the other forest animals, brought St. Francis a present, and he had nothing. And so he painted the eggs and put them in a nest. Now, I cannot. So if anybody can help me with that, please do write in or let us know.
It's a lovely story. I hope somebody can find it out to be true. But if not, Liz, continue saying it, but always preface it with, "It is said," or "I have heard."
Right. And as usual, a good guide, half a story.
Oh, half a story.
I can't remember the end of it, but half a story. That's the story of my life.
But the other thing that I found, you, when we were doing this, that you were saying that this Easter bunny thing, that the Scottish Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals said last year they rescued 493 pet rabbits from across Scotland. People were obviously buying rabbits, giving them to children for Easter, and then the rabbits were kind of neglected after 2 days, you know.
So it's a bunny is for life.
A bunny
and not
is
just
for
Easter.
Life. I know. Can you imagine that, having to do that?
But it's not just puppies, it's rabbits.
It's rabbits as well, yes.
But again, going back to our childhood, we might not have had the Easter bunny coming with his basket of painted eggs, but we certainly did decorate our eggs. I mean, yeah. I remember that every Easter, getting the eggs. You had to boil them hard.
Hard boil them, yes.
Yeah, put in a pan of water, some salt and a wee bit of vinegar. And then, of course, you had to colour them. So you had to start off with a basic colour. Now, nowadays, you might just use food dyes. Yeah. But particularly in rural areas, the kids were sent out to gather the gorse that was coming into flower to make a nice yellow colour. Onion skins are supposed to give it a very dark brown colour.
Oh, that's right. They do. Or tea.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I remember dyeing the egg, the whole shell in a colour, and then painting it with just a paintbrush and paints. I had no artistry in me, so it tended to be very odd, but I enjoyed doing that.
It was creative, absolutely. Yes. It was creative. It was craft and play. But again, we think of it, you know, as being religious possibly, but again, in Europe, it goes right back to the Middle Ages, 13th century. The eggs were dyed red, which was intended to symbolise the blood of Christ. So nothing new. It's been going on, particularly in Germany and across Eastern Europe, for generations.
And it was also a very nice thing, you know, a family gathering around the kitchen table or something, and everybody dyeing their eggs and having a wee sort of friendly competition about, you know, what your egg looks like. This is why I know mine were dreadful, because I was told that by my sisters.
Well, it didn't really matter, because there is one tradition that is particularly associated with Scotland, and that's egg rolling. So once you've painted, you've dyed and you've painted your beautiful egg, it's hard boiled on the inside. What we did in Scotland, and I don't know about you, Helen, but certainly we did it religiously every Easter Sunday, we would go out and we would take it to a hill.
Yes.
Now, not just any hill, it had to be the perfect incline on the hill, because what did you do with it?
You rolled the egg down the hill. You had a wee race with your sisters rolling the egg. So this is why the incline became important, because if it was too steep an incline, the egg would just shatter, because it would hit a tuft of grass or a stone and just break. And, oh, my egg's broken. Or if it wasn't steep enough, it would just, oh, my egg won't roll.
So the winner was the one that got theirs to roll furthest. Yeah. And of course, the associations nowadays are rolling away the stone in the resurrection. But it didn't matter.
We used to always go up to Damyat, the hill on the Opals. And there was a lovely part of Damyat, not the top, a lovely part where you could have lots of families up there having picnics and rolling eggs, Easter eggs. Great.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't. That's very much a part of it, because that's what I always remember as well. Once you'd rolled your egg, it smashed.
You ate it.
Cold.
Spat out the bits of grass and anything else on the egg. Rolled
all the broken eggshell. Yeah, but it was picnics, because my recollections are the weather was always good, and that was really the start of getting out and about with your family. Yeah. You'd have a traditional picnic, and you know, it's been taken all over the world, and today, to this day, they have an Easter egg roll on the White House lawn across in the States. So, you know, settlers going from Scotland, moving abroad, taking it with them. They've taken this tradition of rolling your egg on Easter Sunday. Yes.
And then there are some other traditions which are not, I'm not quite so familiar with, but are kind of regional traditions, weren't they? How they, yeah. The Wapiti Stoori in the West Coast. I didn't know anything about that, Liz. It was just something that you discovered in your researches.
Yeah, it's a bit like riding the boundaries of the down in the borders, where the boundaries of the different parishes or whatever. It says that Wapiti Stoori, that the children would gather in the streets at Easter and they'd run around the local church ringing bells and shouting Wapiti Stoori. And then they'd go out and beat the boundaries, hitting the boundary stones with sticks. So I don't know anything about that one, but it's said to be a good old Scottish tradition.
Well, that's interesting.
So if anybody knows anything about it.
And you can find these boundary stones all around. There's boundary stones around De Villa Forest near us, Liz, that presumably at one time perhaps they would certainly ride them, because that kind of allowed sort of legally the boundaries were then set again for another year.
Yep. And of course, these traditions continue most in areas that are still rural, you know, that are still, you know, the highlands and the isles, the rural communities. So those are very much in line with the land. So it's said that Good Friday is the best time to plant potatoes because the temperatures are still cool, but the soil is soft enough that it's not frozen any longer. So traditionally, potatoes would have been planted on Good Friday.
Oh, that's interesting, because you know, I've noticed they're in the shops, you know, they've been in the shops, so presumably there'll be a whole run on potatoes, the seed potatoes, over the next week, and we'll all be out gardening, rolling eggs and gardening. What a busy day Sunday's going to be. And cooking lamb.
And cooking lamb, exactly, you'll need to have it now. But if you go to the Hebrides, the Western Isles, a lot of traditions that are still kept there. And it wasn't lamb, it was ham that was the traditional meal of choice on Easter Sunday. And they've got an organisation that collects all the social history, the stories. And there's a story that how the sea turned salty. And that was a man sent out by his wife to get the ham for their Sunday meal. He got the last one in the shop. But as is the way up in the Western Isles, when he was going home, he came across a fairy, you know, the little people, the she up on the islands. And the fairy offered to swap the ham for a magic mill that could make him anything, a bit like the genie in the magic lamp. She was giving him a magic mill. And so he swapped the ham and he got the mill. And at first he used it to make more hams so that he could sell them to the people in the village, because there was no hams left in the shop. But as with most stories involving magic lamps or magic mills, it doesn't end up well, because in the end he sold it to a ship's captain. And the ship's captain in the story started to make salt. But unfortunately he couldn't get the mill to stop. And so his ship, you know, got all this salt, made it sink to the bottom of the sea, and the mill continues to churn out salt to this day. So that's why the sea is salty, according to the people of South Uist.
And isn't it interesting, because of that salty sea and where we live, Liz, on the coast, one of the big industries on the Firth of Forth was making salt from the sea, returning it back to salt and selling it as a huge commodity all over, you know, this part of the world and abroad. So perhaps the sea captain did us a favour.
Yep, the importance of capturing all of these stories. And, you know, these stories are wonderful to tell to tourists, and Easter very much marks the start of the tourist season in Scotland.
Yes, and it's, I don't know about you, Liz, but my calendar is really quite full, but not so much over the beginning of April. I've got days like my day in St Andrews with a group of people on Good Friday, but from the end of April it's whoosh right through to October with showing lovely people around our super country.
Yeah, and of course it starts with the Easter holidays, where it's the domestic market. They're looking for something to do, this family time, a time of relaxation and leisure. And so all of our tourist spots and our beauty spots are doing everything that they possibly can to attract these early visitors, these locally domiciled early visitors.
And there's some really quite innovative things going on. I noticed that the Burrell Gallery in Glasgow, just outside Glasgow, they're having a hunt for rabbit sketches. So it's the Easter bunny hunt, and not with eggs, and by one of the main artists at the display, Joseph Crawhall, he was a colourist, he was a Scottish artist, or one of the Glasgow boys. And, you know, I thought that's really clever. You have a bunny hunt, but use a recognized artist's sketch of the bunny. So it teaches children as well to understand and appreciate art.
Absolutely. So, you know, the smaller organisations like the Burrell Collections, the Royal Botanic Gardens, they've all got events on. Of course, the big boys, the really big boys, Historic Scotland and Historic Environment Scotland, yes, and the National Trust for Scotland, they've got so many properties that they are all running events. National Trust for Scotland, it's egg hunts. And at most of their properties, there's Easter egg trails around the grounds or the gardens or the houses, crafts. And of course, there's lots of chocolate on hand as well.
And it's a good way for these organisations. Some of their properties are closed over the winter time. So this is a beginning, opening them up for the season. And by inviting people in to do something exciting in the Easter-like, then it's telling the world we're open, we've got lots going on. I've been to these properties and some of these open days, Liz. They are absolutely jam-packed with people having fabulous time.
Yeah, I mean, they've got such wonderful gardens for the kids to run about in, you know, so it really is a very important time of the year. But you've also got commercial, for example, Darnley Spiced Gin, which is made at King's Barnes Distillery outside St Andrews. They have a gin with a cinnamon and nutmeg, so it's got a kind of hot cross bun vibe going on in it. So everybody's capitalising, not just Fisher and Donaldson.
That's right. Oh yes, they're, I will phone them up, Liz, and see what I can do on Friday.
And of course, it's the time of all the fluffy little animals, the lambs, goats. And so Lunan Bay Farm, which is in Angus, they have a goat nursery and they have an event called the Antics of Our Famous Goats in Coats. So you can imagine what that's all about. Gosh. A lot of farms opening up for lambing experience. Yeah. Lennox Farm in Lennox of Lomond, next to Loch Lomond. So lots of events going on.
Yes, and all of them kind of, you know, putting Easter at the heart of their theme. I think the one that I would really like to go to is the one at Jupiter Artland, just outside Edinburgh, where it's a bunny for Enchanted Storytime and an egg hunt at Jupiter Artland. That's all beautifully landscaped by Charles Jenks. So it's a beautiful place to be in, water and rolling sort of hills and landscaped sort of little hillocks. Lots of sculptures through the woods as well. I like that one.
Well, I thought that the one that would have been favourite for you, because it certainly looks one I would definitely like to go to, is called Operation Broken Feather. And it's going on at Stirling Castle. And it's all about the corncrake, which is a little bird. It's not so little, it's quite a big bird, but it's a migratory bird. And I associate it very much with Iona, because as you walk through Iona in the early months of the year, the spring months, you can hear this. It's like a file being drawn across a rasp. It's a real creaking crack, crack. And you have all these twitchers, these bird watchers on Iona searching for this little bird. And I remember one time there's a field in front of the church and they've all got their, you know, their cameras with the big lenses. They're all looking for it. And I walked in the opposite direction up the road and two of them walked across the road in front of me as if to say, leave them down here. We're having peace and quiet up here.
Oh dear. But no, yes, I think the innovation and the, you know, very imaginative thinking of the people who put on these events each year is terrific, has to be commended.
And of course Edinburgh kind of leads the way, because it's famous for its festivals. We've got the Science Festival goes on over Easter, and of course that's a huge draw for children to come, and you know, it's interactive, it's a wonderful thing that goes on all over April and May. And at the front of that, at the National Museum of Scotland, we've got the Doctor Who Worlds of Wonder exhibition, which is still running.
Yeah, and you know, it's just everywhere is just, as you said at the very beginning, Liz, everything is coming alive. You're wakening up to the new, to the spring and to the new, you know, the new dawn of the summer coming. Just welcoming everybody to this wonderful summer that we're going to have. Sunshine, no rain, and just lovely, sort of warm but just not too hot weather.
I'm just hoping for 2 feet and the ability to walk. That'll suit me.
That'll suit you.
So much to be done. It's a wonderful time of year and a wonderful time for people to think about travelling to Scotland. And if you're travelling to Scotland, you want to know what the word of the week is.
Oh, yes.
Word of the week, Helen?
Well, I'm going to say we talked about the hot cross bun and the cross on the hot cross bun being Ken speckled, being different at Easter time. It's kind of easily seen or recognised. They make it just not just plain white. They put little specks and things on the cross. Ken speckled.
Yeah. Well, I've taken one. The old Scots word for Easter was pash. Now, pash comes from the Hebrew. It's a derivative of the Hebrew pesach, which means Passover. And it's mentioned in the Passover festive in Exodus 12. But if you think about it, the French word for Easter is Pâques, which is similar. So pash. So if you were going to say, away and roll your Easter egg in Old Scots, you would say, away and row your pash egg. That would be away and roll your Easter egg.
That's lovely. That's lovely, Liz.
That's my word. Pash is my word of the week.
Good.
Well,
another episode done, and wishing everybody a very happy Easter and rolling of eggs and eating of chocolate eggs, rolling of hard-boiled eggs, eating of chocolate eggs. Have a great time.
Absolutely. And think about coming to visit Scotland as the new year for the tourist season dawns.
Yeah.
Thanks, Helen.
Okay, thank you, Liz. Bye, everybody.
Bye for now.